Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit and nonpartisan forum open to the public. To attend a Commonwealth Club event, check out our program listing at www.commonwealthclub.org. Now we join today's program of the Commonwealth Club.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's meeting of Inform, a division of the Commonwealth Club. Tonight, our guest is author and blogger Anna Marie Cox. I'm Tabitha Soren, and when I began covering politics for MTV in the 90s, we didn't do it in the typical fashion, and a lot of people didn't like it. Ms. Cox has also managed to annoy quite a few people with her approach to politics and Washington, D.C. culture, but she's also made a lot of people laugh and got people interested who might not have otherwise been interested in politics. As she puts it, Washington is a place where you can only get and remain famous if you remain boring. Anna Marie Cox made her name writing the very unboring Wonkette, the blog that became essential daily reading for political junkies everywhere, and which, every now and again, reads like a penthouse forum. This is Inform, of course, and the goal here is to inspire debate about public issues, not excite you about private ones, but I think it'll be kind of challenging tonight because, as you may have guessed, her new novel, Dog Days, is filled with sex, gossip, and booze. Please welcome Anna Marie Cox. So we'll feel closer as it goes on.
I feel like I should be doing Semaphore.
Did I quote you correctly?
Yes, you did.
Well, can you tell me more about what you meant about having to remain boring to remain famous?
Well, Washington is a town that has become, over the years, I think this is actually just over the past like 10 or 15 years, maybe 20, I guess, where personality is discouraged in anyone who's going to be in the public eye. You have to be sort of squeaky clean and anonymous and blow-dried. And we see that in our presidential candidates. We see that in our senatorial candidates. We see that in television personalities. Only kind of people on the way up before they get famous are allowed to be interesting.
Well, let me read this short passage from your book, and this will be the only time I do this. But she writes, "Interesting rarely translated into power. Interesting, in fact, often gave people ammunition to get you out of power. And if interesting got your foot in the door, you unlearned interesting on your way up." And I just had to wonder, reading that, if I transpose that onto you, if you were worried at all that maybe simultaneously this was going to be forced onto you.
Right. I've been asked that before, and I guess the point is, while I may be kind of interesting, I'm also not that famous. And I think there is a ceiling on how much, you know, how famous for D.C. I can probably get. Quitting Wonkette will help me be more boring and therefore may be more famous. I haven't actually quit. I'm becoming the editor emeritus.
You're still contributing.
Yes, still contributing. I miss the days when people were more interesting in Washington and famous, you know, LBJ, a good character. And there are a few glaring exceptions. John McCain is interesting, although controversial. I find Chris Matthews fascinating.
Why?
He's insane. There's a joke in the book that he keeps Nilla wafers in his pocket, which actually I heard a rumor that that's actually true, but just the idea that he would just get hungry and like stick his hand in his jacket and start munching seemed very in keeping with the same guy that would, you know, be there when Zell Miller challenged him to a duel and seemed ready to take him up on it. That's why I like Chris Matthews.
In going through Wonkette on my computer as of late, I wondered, do you remember the first time you shocked someone? I mean, is this something you've been doing your whole life? And did you enjoy it?
I think my parents said, like, used to run naked through our apartment building, so that might count. But that was when I was two. So
how about something intentional?
I don't know. I don't ever think that my goal was explicitly to shock people. I'm very lucky in that I grew up in a household where, freedom of expression was encouraged. The whole running around naked thing is maybe an early example of that. And when people think I'm trying to shock, I usually think I'm just expressing myself in maybe the most blunt way possible. And it's true that Wonkette, partially because when it first started out, I was sort of semi-anonymous. People really didn't know who I was. And in order to get my courage up to blog in such a public way, I had to invent a persona. And so I sort of thought of this like drunken, slatternly housewife, and which I was, basically. I was living in the suburbs and not working. So, and I usually wasn't drunk by noon, but five, sure. and so I figured like she would like curse a lot and eat bonbons and drink gin, and that seemed to be something that meshed well with my actual personality and therefore flowered in a way that, you know, people seemed to like that.
And these are the values you picked up in Lincoln, Nebraska? That's where you grew up, right?
I grew up in Lincoln, and also my father has started to refer to it as the Nebraska myth, because I also grew up in Texas, and it's very important to him, should he hear this, that I mentioned that I spent part of my childhood in Austin. Not that being from Nebraska is bad, he said, but being from Texas is better. So,
how did your parents feel about some of the smutty items that you were writing about on Wonkette?
The sense of humor that was around the Cox family dinner table was perhaps not quite as ribald as... No anal sex jokes. Lots of pull my finger jokes, which is close. there was lots of... And also, all these jokes were interlaced with discussions of politics. I remember that I think my first political memory is of my grandmother ranting about Nixon. You know, and then my grandfather saying, pull my finger. So I think that right there is the genesis of Wonkette.
And
they're all a little drunk, too.
I also read that you had a background in fanzines and actually started writing in that sort of subculture. And I connect that with sort of do-it-yourself music and that kind of pop culture.
I connect that with no one else hiring me.
Well, there's that. Depends how old you were.
Well, I had gone to graduate school and dropped out and I had no marketable skills having been a graduate student. At Berkeley, actually. and I really did want to work in mainstream journalism. Very desperately wanted to have healthcare, as a matter of fact. And no one really would hire me, so a fanzine and webzine seemed like the way to go. And I was lucky enough that I actually did get hired.
So it wasn't a love of outsider culture or you?
No, I've been trying to get on the inside.
Or...
I've been trying to get on the inside for years. Are you kidding me? The book contract is like, that's finally my parents know what I do for a living. I mean.
Well, what made you want to make the transition from blogging to writing books? Blogging is so hip.
Yeah, blogging is really hip, but people reread novels. And also remember what they read the day before in a novel. And also, there was a genuine feeling that I was really fascinated by Washington culture. Because Wonkette took off in the way that it did, I wound up getting what I've called a second row seat to the election in 2004, which is that I wasn't right up there in the middle of it and inside the bubble, but I was close enough to smell the bourbon on people's breath. And and I was fascinated by these people who I'd known before. My husband worked at the Washington Post, so I'd had some interactions with the sort of what my husband calls the permanent government of Washington, which is the journalists and the staffers that stay even when the administrations come and go. And I felt like there were things I could write about in the blog that I saw at parties, like little bits and overheard, you know, snippets of conversation, but there was no way to like get at these characters, get at the people who I found so interesting and the dialogue that I thought was so funny. Like, there's no way you could do that in a blog.
Well, so why don't we talk a little bit about the book? It's called Dog Days, and why don't you tell me what attracted you to the protagonist, Melanie Thornton?
Well, I often describe Wonkette as me after a few too many margaritas. I think Melanie would be me, you know, without a center in my life. I mean, I think that Melanie represents someone who comes to Washington thinking that she wants to do good and wanting to do good and then getting seduced by the swirl of it all. and the feeling of power that one gets when one covers or works on a presidential campaign, when everyone, the entire world is looking at what you're doing, and you feel like, you know, this is the most important thing that could ever happen, ever. And there's a sense of power and of license that comes with that. And I wanted to create, I guess I thought I was creating a sympathetic character, though some reviewers have disagreed. I wanted to find out, I wanted to sort of put someone in the middle of all that and see what she would do. Someone who is basically good but tempted, let's say.
And since you've been on a book tour, why don't you, is there a way to synopsize the story for people who haven't had a chance to read
it? That's probably what you wanted with the first question.
No. It just occurred to me that I've read the book and they haven't.
Melanie Thornton, 20-something campaign staffer for a campaign that remarkably resembles the Kerry campaign. Really, it isn't, though, really. She is bombarded in her... There's a scandal burgeoning in her personal life. She's having an affair with a very powerful married Washington journalist. And then there's also a campaign targeting her candidate, Citizens for Clear Heads, a 527 that has accused John Hillman of having undergone mind control experiments at Harvard so that he will redistribute wealth at the push of a button. But whose hand is on the button, the ads say. And so because these simultaneous crises occur, she and her best friend, who's a political consultant, decide to invent a more juicy scandal and hopefully distract the Washington Press Corps, who are very easily distracted from those two things.
And so many... Does it bother you, the similarities between real life and the book? I mean, obviously everyone draws from some of their own experiences, and you seem to be sort of mocking the fact that it is such a, you know, thin line between the two. Because I think a lot of readers will assume that Melanie is really you and Heather, the waitress in the book, or the Eliza Doolittle character, if you will, is really Jessica Cutler of the Washingtonian scandal.
And they will assume that, and there's nothing I can do about it. I mean, people...
Does it matter?
I guess as long as they enjoy the book.
Do you guys know about the Jessica Cutler scandal?
I can Some do the thumbnail.
Yeah, why don't you give them a thumbnail?
Jessica Cutler was a... And this I feel like I've rehearsed several times, but Jessica Cutler was a very low-level Senate staffer for Mike DeWine of Ohio. And she said later that the reason she started a blog detailing her sexual exploits was because she was too lazy to send out individual emails to her friends. So she started this blog and I guess didn't realize that you could just read it without a password or something. And she also didn't, although she used initials, she didn't change anything else about the scenario she was describing. And I believe the first line of her blog that I remember reading was, "I can't believe I'm sleeping with five guys." But she didn't use the word sleeping. It was a very frank blog. And even though and there was some titillation of the fact that she was supposedly one of her admirers was a chief of staff or assistant chief of staff for some thing in this federal government, but we're not talking Scooter Libby. He probably was confirmed in the Senate by, you know, sort of with a raft of other people. But in any case, the combination of blogging, which was considered very sexy at the time, this new, hot new medium, and then, of course, this woman who was getting paid to have sex, really excited people in Washington. And what happened the other...
Tell them what you did.
Oh, I linked to her. And apparently people then found out about her. Because I linked to her.
But didn't you also take pictures of a bunch of chiefs of staff just randomly and had people guess which one of them?
Right. Well, I thought that none of them looked... Well, I thought that none of them really looked like they could get laid. So it seemed to me not a terrible thing to do. I mean, also, to me, it was like such a joke. Like, all their pictures were available on Google if you, like, wanted to do... If
take
you did chief
time.
Of staff, you know, federal government. And I just did a sort of an array of them. And said which one looks like they have to pay to have sex, and all of the above, really. So people think that's very controversial. I guess I I don't see that. Maybe I crossed a line in some way, but it was
kind
such
of outed her.
Oh, but that's different. I mean, I mean, when I linked to her, I had no idea who she was, but it was so clear from the details in her blog. This, at least my understanding of the story, is that she went out to lunch. I linked to the blog over lunchtime, and she came back and was fired. And then she got a book deal for much more than I got.
Yeah, so you did her a favor in the end, right?
I have a transition here, which is that that happened, and it did cause this enormous, like, sort of, you know, perfect storm from Washington. It was kind of a slow. It was like April. You know, things weren't that exciting in the presidential campaign at the time. And people, there was a small but dedicated group of people who were convinced that I had cooked up the entire thing as a way to get publicity for the blog. And I thought, oh my God, that's ingenious. Why didn't I think of it before? And that is actually sort of how the novel also came into being, which I thought, why would you do that? Perhaps, you know, there's a story there.
I feel like I experienced such a different part of Washington, or maybe time of Washington, D.C. It always seemed like the most asexy place to me. And your descriptions of it, I just was at the wrong parties, I think.
I guess you were. You weren't drunk enough. The line in the book is that it's like the Special Olympics of sex, which is that everyone's a winner. And though I've coined the phrase famous for D.C., there's also, I have to give credit to Kirsten Gore in her book, where she uses the phrase hot for D.C., which is even more of an insult. And so everyone's graded on a curve, you know. And
right.
I also think that election years are an even more intense time in terms of, like,
desperate sex.
Desperate sex, yes. And, again, you feel like you deserve all sorts of things when you work, you know, 23-hour days, and one of them might be getting laid.
Right. And this whole time you were married, you've been married for years, right?
Yes, I have a very tolerant husband. Yes, I've been married for 6 years now. And
has writing about smutty things ever made your relationship tricky?
Wow. Well, doctor.
Sorry. Is that off? You can talk about other people having sex, but not...
Well, actually, you know, I don't actually talk. I mean, I've never. I've only rarely insinuated that people are having actual affairs on Wonkat. And my husband has perhaps, obviously, a great sense of humor.
I didn't mean to imply that you were having affairs.
That's okay.
I just mean,
fine.
In terms of the intimate nature of some of the things you talk about, or write about, rather. I just wonder if he'd feel uncomfortable.
He would rather that I not refer to him. The references to Mr. Wonkat have to be vetted.
Mm-hmm.
But he does have actually a really great sense of humor and has occasionally written things for Wonkat under a pseudonym, which I will not reveal.
All right.
He kind of also understands that this is an anthropological experiment for me in a lot of ways, at least... You know, last August when he was actually out of town a lot of August, which was very convenient, not to have an affairs, but to watch other people have affairs.
The book takes place during the month of August.
Sorry, hence that's the genesis of the title, Dog Days.
And are you a news junkie like everyone in Washington claims to be?
Yeah, isn't it funny how everyone claims it, but people are actually... I think everyone subsists on Google News alerts rather than actually reading any...
I always felt so guilty that I got away with one newspaper that I didn't have to have five before 7 o'clock in the morning. I valued my sleep more.
Right. I think some people do that, but there's also this whole cottage industry in D.C. of news digests and political tip sheets that no one ever actually reads an entire article because there are people paid to do that. And digest it for you. It's true that, like most people in Washington, not most people, but the permanent government class in Washington, I have CNN or Fox on basically the entire time I'm at work, desk, second bedroom,
right,
pajamas.
But it's not something you grew up being obsessed about, always wanting to talk politics with your parents and your friends were all the nerdy, you know.
Actually, I was a little bit of a geek. In fact, I was going to be a public policy major in college and wrote very dry statistical analysis of, like, things like abortion law. Fun. That's laugh a minute there.
That brings up an important point, though. I think it's so much easier for people to be interested about some of the trivia or the gossip associated with politics instead of actually trying to dissect some of the policy.
Well, the policy is hard. You know, gossip is easy, policy is hard. And policy is, knowing about it can be rewarding in that it actually helps you understand some of the gossip better. But it isn't its own, you know, titillating reward. It is just sort of the duty of a concerned citizen, which is eating your greens kind of work.
I guess I'm interested in how many greens you also eat. Like, I mean, is the salacious part of this upper level Washington D.C. insider stuff what really interests you exclusively, or are you also reading, you know, Bill Clinton's book when you go home at night, or even worse, Gore's Earth in the Balance, or something
you can be interested in politics and not read books by politicians. In fact, I think that would get you uninterested in politics very quickly. But I do read, you know, somewhat like non-sexy political books, and I'm right now reading Nina Easton's book about the history of the current leadership of the GOP called Gang of Five. See, I could go on. It's always like, I do care about that stuff. It doesn't show up in Wonkette because that's not what Wonkette is for.
Right. Sure.
But
that's what I was trying to
figure
out.
I have whole long conversations with people that don't involve anal sex, and including, you know, not my husband. So I think that part of what made Wonkette appealing, I mean, I think that a lot of the humor in Wonkette worked because there is a structure of knowledge that I was that behind it.
Sure.
That I do understand the issues I'm talking about before I make the joke about them.
Sure.
I mean, I think that's what happened. I mean, I may be deceiving myself, but
is there anything in
there's there was also a lot of drinking, and that could have been the structure supporting it as well.
Is there anything in the newspaper today or this week or some sort of current event that you're obsessively following?
No fair to ask the author on book tour about current events.
Yeah, okay, good point. That's
although I have been following, actually, this is a geeky thing, but the whole disastrous Medicare switchover where all these people are getting, the people who are double enrolled, right. See, people who are double enrolled in both state and federal plans got kicked out.
Right.
And now all these states are having to come to the rescue.
Is
California.
Is this because you left Wonkette and no longer have health care? You're projecting.
Well, I think the reason we got married when we did actually is because of health care. If Clinton had come through with the whole nationalized health care thing, we would have stayed engaged for another year. That's what I told my parents, at least. I could go on about the Medicare thing. The Abramoff thing is very interesting as well. I don't really get the current delay scandal. And I do feel like the chart to understand the Abramoff scandal is very complicated.
And could be disappointing in the end.
Yes. But I have been following it.
And your politics, I've heard you describe yourself as a big pinko commie. Are there conservative elements that people would be surprised that exist in your personality?
I think, I don't know how surprised they would be. There are plenty of liberals out there who think that because I mock, you know, prominent Democrats that I must have some conservative alliances. I would say that, well, this would surprise people, that contrary to the entire sort of persona of Wonkette, I'm actually kind of a prude in my personal life and don't like gory movies and don't like, you know, actually watching any kind of sexually related things that aren't me. I'm not completely anti-gun, which is, I think, maybe something radical for a liberal to say.
That's
in
the
California.
Texas part of you.
Yeah. My father, I drilled it into me, if they take away your guns, you can't go after them when they, you know, when they do something wrong. I think my father actually does believe that we could, like, storm the White House with our, you know, rifles if things get really bad. He's an idealist.
As someone who's spent a lot of time writing for fairly underappreciated publications and getting fired from several jobs as in various sorts, are you surprised by all the attention that Wonkette has garnered and as a result you as an individual?
I'm shocked, quite frankly, and disappointed in American culture. They should know better. But of course, I also feel like it's all doomed to end any second now. So this has been incredibly fun. I feel very lucky. I know there's a lot of people who work very hard their entire lives and never get to even have anything close to the kind of visibility and success that I've had. And I think all those long years of being the person, not even on the second row, but like way up in the balcony and watching this happen, has made me appreciate, you know, what I've gotten to do.
So can you give me specific details about how Wonkette changed your life? Are you, you know, has your standard of living skyrocketed? Do you have more interesting friends? Is your sex life better? Free
You're
booze?
Really curious
has anybody
about my
decided
husband,
to sort of sponsor your drinking habits?
That would be so great.
They do it for stores and
I know.
All sorts of things.
People have asked if I should get in touch with, like, my two brands are Makers and Bombay Sapphire.
Just for the
And
record.
They're not paying me yet, but I'll say them again if they want. Well, you know, it hasn't on a sort of day-to-day basis.
No?
We live in a nice apartment, but it's not, you know, grand.
Better car?
Still have the same Volvo, actually. I think the one thing I can say is that when we travel now, the hotels have robes. We now stay in the kinds of hotels that offer you a robe. That's the big difference. And I do have actually, and I should be also say, I do have some friends that I wouldn't have met otherwise, and some really terrific, wonderful friends that I wouldn't have met otherwise. I also have some pretty bad enemies that I wouldn't have had otherwise, but
well, that's,
it balances
that's
out.
The flip side. Anyone getting any sort of attention, you're going to get good and bad, and you're subject to criticism. How has the transition from blogging to being a player in mainstream journalism to now being a published author, trying to make your way through the publishing world? Ben.
It doesn't feel that different yet. I have been told over and over again that I'm no longer an outsider, and yet people still don't return calls. And I still, you know, I went to, like, there's this David Carr was writing something about me for New York Times, and his big idea was we go to the Palm, and, like, because that's where all the power people in D.C. are, and, like, no one knew who I was. It was just a complete drawing, complete blank, everyone there. Except when they brought in the photographer, there was this, like, sort of like, oh, who's that? Oh, a blogger? Blog? You know, I mean, I don't, I think that I'm still on the fringes of actual seats of power. And as far as mainstream publishing, well, now I just realize when I was a struggling freelancer and couldn't get editors to return my calls, and I was suspected that it was all a racket. Now I know for sure it is total racket. Like, and once you're on the inside, people just start handing you contracts, and you don't deserve them, and you didn't pitch anything. And now I'm sort of outraged on behalf of my former freelancer self. I would hate me.
For me, reading Wonkette and being introduced to just being in, reading blogs in general is very hard for me. It seems incredibly inefficient. but Wonkette was clearly different in just this last couple of weeks of paying attention in that particular venue. And it really did feel like a breath of fresh air. The book feels that way too. But the problem with being a breath of fresh air is sort of maintaining that. Do you have any strategies about how to continue,
I think,
keeping it fresh?
The constant sense of impending doom will help. And I also think the one thing about Wonkette, and I think the book reflects this feeling as well, is that Washington is a town where everyone takes themselves so seriously that as someone who's kind of a natural contrarian, like, I have no fear that there won't be that to react against, you know? Like, I never worry that I'm not going to have an example of someone who thinks they're the greatest for me to remind myself, you know, to be irreverent and to not care so much and to try and puncture those enormous egos that make it hard to breathe up there.
Well, also, the protagonist in the book, anyway, at the end, ends up feeling sort of hollow and empty and deciding, you know, there's a different value system that she's more comfortable with. And, you know, that seems a sustaining idea as well on some level. I mean, when you're inside Washington, D.C., or even, you know, inside the power structure in New York City, to not be consumed with ambition and just power and having that be your complete identity is kind of difficult.
Yes, objects in the mirror may be less important than they appear. That would be a good motto for both, I think, D.C. and
But if you're
Washington.
Being sort of paid attention to by those
You want
types,
to believe it's that important. You want to
yeah,
believe
well,
it.
Yeah, well, just you don't have any context.
I think having a real life and real friends outside of those structures is what really makes a difference. I mean, the fact that I did, you know, meet, I can't believe how much Chris is coming up, but that I did meet and marry my husband outside of Washington and when we were both, you know, sort of more struggling. And that we came there together makes a big difference. I think the fact that I still have friends from, you know, who I am with constantly who hate Washington and can't stand the fact that I'm there and can mock it in the same vicious way that I desire to keep doing, I think that helps a lot. And I also think, I mean, that's actually also a place where we're caring about policy and reading about things beyond just the gossip in Washington is important because there is like there are real issues at stake. There are people getting kicked off their prescription, you know, in all these states, and there are people who are, you know, suffering and dying because of some error that a bureaucrat made. I mean, I think that I hate to sort of bring us down. We can start talking about sex and drinking again if you want. But, you know, people in Washington, and this is something that's in the book as well, they forget that these, you know, the line item that you leave in or take out can have a real effect on someone's life. Like, it starts to be just a game, and that's what happens to the protagonist of the book, is that it all becomes just part of staying afloat and just a part of keeping the campaign going and forgetting, like, why you're there in the first place.
And can you tell us what's next for you? Obviously, the book tour is in your immediate future, but...
I'll be sleeping for 36 hours.
If you're not going to be editing Wonkette, what are you working on?
I will be working on a nonfiction book.
That's keeping it fresh.
Yeah,
go from blogging to fiction to nonfiction.
Yeah, I think exercising different muscles is an important part of staying fresh. I was saying today to someone that like blogging is like playing a piano with like one finger, like constantly hitting the same note over and over and over, and that writing a novel is like having to use both hands. And I think I'm trying to think of the right metaphor for nonfiction, but I think it's going to involve even more, like, you know, one of those banjo and the knee clapping and accordion and leaving the house wearing pants, that kind of thing.
a little reporting, perhaps.
A little reporting. And I should tell you what it's about. My sort of glib description of the book, what else would there be, is it's an anthropological survey of young conservatives. My aim is that it's
people
like...
People are chuckling.
I know. You don't take me seriously. That's my secret weapon. And the aim is that it...
And they're cute.
Yeah, they're adorable.
They bathe.
yes, unlike the liberals. I've also said that my goal is that it's like Stephen Glass's pieces about young conservatives, but it'll be actually true. Which may mean there is less drinking and sex. I am really fascinated by the people that are growing up conservative right now, the people that will be running the country, I suspect, in 10 years.
So it's not a 200-page book of mocking conservatism or...
There will be mocking
okay.
When mocking is appropriate, I think. But I do have... I feel like... There's some part of me that totally could have gone that way if things had been different somehow, if the sliding door
way
had not opened.
Different.
Yes, I know. But in any case, I'm fascinated. Like, I listen to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity all the time. I watch the 700 Club. And I always feel like I would love to be convinced that these people are right, that would just be great if I could just believe that they're right, because then my party would be in power.
I'm sure they'd love to take you.
But so I do, and I also, one of the ways that this is a good and bad thing of Washington, which is that everyone is friends, like no one has enemies in Washington because it doesn't profit you to have enemies. And so I do actually have a lot of friends who are conservatives, and some of them work in the White House and whatnot. And they are very excited about the book for some reason.
We look forward to it.
Yeah, good.
We're going to be heading into the audience question and answer period of tonight's program in just a few minutes. So if you'd like, if you have questions for Anna, you can start lining up at the mics in the aisles. But before I turn the show over to you, I thought she and I would whip through a quick rapid round of questions during which I ask her really short questions and she gives me really short answers. And if she doesn't have a quick answer, she'll just pass. Because none of them are all that important.
Paint $20,000 pyramid.
Yeah, exactly. No buzzers, though. Which area of American...
I'll buy a vowel.
Which area of American culture do you wish you had more time to keep up with?
Music.
As a writer, is it more important to be read or to be accurate?
Oh, accurate.
Name your hero or heroine.
Joan Didion.
Who is your favorite politician?
McCain. I'm so lame. But
least favorite?
Awesome. That is too many
too
to count.
Too long a list?
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite talking head?
Chris Matthews, totally.
Least favorite talking head?
Oh, God, I'm going to make an enemy.
You don't have to. besides Wonkette, which blog do you read the most?
Embarrassingly, Boing Boing. Just not politics or at all. So.
Least favorite way of being described?
Saucy or snarky. There's a whole series of S words that I would like to ban.
Sexy.
Slutty, also bad.
Easiest way to make you laugh?
Obviously asking me questions works.
All right. Fill in the blank. If I never have to blank again, it'll be too soon.
Travel and coach.
Here are a couple of quickies from Proust. A little deeper, but if you can, you're free to pass. What is your greatest fear?
Oh, not having a right answer to a question.
What is your greatest extravagance?
French shampoo.
Which words or phrases do you most overuse?
Valley girl phrases.
What do you most value in your friends?
Honesty.
How would you like to die?
Happy, old, and rich.
These are real quick. Which of the following do you prefer? Married sex or single sex?
Oh, married.
Cheney or quail?
Are you talking about the bird? Because that would be what I would prefer.
Favorite guitarist?
My husband.
Favorite female singer?
Oh, God. I have to pass.
All right. White Stripes or the Strokes?
White Stripes.
Woody Allen or Martin Scorsese?
Ew.
All right.
Wes Anderson?
Jennifer or Angelina?
Oh, God, I'm going to give a lot away. Angelina.
Ooh!
I know.
The Colbert Report or The Daily Show?
Ooh, tie.
CNN or The Daily Show?
Daily Show.
John Franzen or Jon Stewart?
Oh,
it's
God.
Hard.
That is hard.
All right.
That's
Jessica Cutler or Monica Lewinsky?
Monica.
John McCain or John Wayne?
McCain.
David Sedaris or Amy Sedaris?
David.
Tequila or gin?
Ooh, gin.
Art or commerce?
Art.
Favorite curse word?
I can't repeat it.
Oh, right. Forgot. Maureen Dowd or Judith Miller?
Ew.
Dave Eggers or Dave Matthews?
Ew.
Thongs or bikinis?
What, thongs or bikinis? Boy shorts? Not an option?
That's an option.
Okay.
Should we rescue Katie Holmes, Iraqi hostages, or animals?
I think we should have Katie Holmes rescue the Iraqi hostages.
All right.
And let the animals be in the final reel.
All right. I think that'll do it. Now it's your turn. For the radio audience, hey, no one's lining up. Please. I can't do this alone.
So much less interesting than we thought.
For the radio audience, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club's Inforum program, and tonight we're talking to Anna Marie Cox of Wonkette And now let's go to the audience for some questions.
Clearly, you've just covered everything.
I just started you off with all of those quick ones. Surely you should make her elaborate on something. Don't be shy. You have to go to the microphone. I'm sorry. This might be broadcast.
Run.
Be bold.
I know that both of you are touching on New York and the Washington, D.C. culture. Do you feel a lot of your writing is completely propelled by being in Washington, D.C., but could you still write on those political issues and topics if you were in a San Francisco environment?
That's a really good question. I suspect that I worry that, you know, ironically, if I were not in Washington, I would take myself more seriously because I wouldn't have these great counterexamples to learn by. And also, there is something about being in Washington and going to these absurd parties that highlights their, you know, you remember how absurd they are. I think when you read about these gatherings where journalists and politicians and staffers and lobbyists get together, like, you think of it as, like, some smooth cocktail party, and everyone's kind of, like, handsome and suave and having their drink. And really, like, it's just all the rejects from high school standing in corners. And seeing that on a regular basis is really important to understand, like, how much, you know, of a charade a lot of this is and how insecure all these people are. And that, you know, reminds you that you can make fun of them with impunity because there's a lot to make fun of.
Hi. I'm coming from the public policy world, so maybe I have that kind of idealistic political viewpoint on this question. But do you think that a part of your writing about the characters that you're coming across and kind of the gossip side of politics is somehow opening politics up to people who otherwise would be turned off because they think it's so unhuman or they don't know how to go into the policy? So that almost by focusing on this lightheartedness, you kind of pull people into more political interest and debate beyond just who's sleeping with whom.
You read my talking points, didn't you?
No, actually.
Yes, that is a very, very excellent point, again, and a wonderful thing to say because I've said it myself. I don't know. I say it so much, this idea that talking about politics as a soap opera and highlighting the absurdities and the eccentricities of these people is a way to get people who normally wouldn't be interested in politics interested. I say that so often that I worry that I'm just repeating it without actually having seen it happen. But if I didn't believe that was true, then I wouldn't be able to continue with any kind of the writing that I do. I mean, if I thought what I was doing was just completely frivolous, I would go back to writing, you know, statistical analysis of you know, abortion data, I think, because I do want to at least I need to feel like there is something happening. There is a part of me that's very idealistic, and that I want to believe that there's something happening because of the work that I do. Oh God, that's so pretentious.
Thank you.
Sorry.
So you've compared blogging to playing a piano with a single key over and over again. And I'm curious, as a leading blogger, do you think that there's a possibility for more?
More than one key?
For one blogs note? That play a lot more than one key?
Yes, I do. I think that one of the things that I see happening, and I hope I continues to evolve, is that people are realizing that blogging is a medium. It's like a desktop publisher or a printing press or a newspaper, or I should say actually paper, in that it is simply a way to put words out into public sphere, and that you can do anything with that. You can blog about politics, you can do reporting, you can blog about kittens, you can blog about, you know, torturing kittens, really anything. And that there is a whole, there are maybe each blog has a tendency to repeat the same note over and over, but there is a lot of different notes out there, let's say. And there are some group blogs that do manage to sound more harmonious than others.
Thanks.
This question is similar to the last one, sort of. You were in an unusual position for a couple of years of having blogging being your sole professional activity, which is something that not a lot of people have done for a very long period of time. Because I mean, as
only one that I reported, at least.
And like, I mean, Gawker is still sort of as advanced as it gets in terms of a professional structure for blogging. And so I'm wondering how that sort of weathered over the course of a couple of years as a profession, and whether or not if you hadn't gotten the book deal, would it have eventually sort of driven you nuts and you would have had to do something else?
I do think blogging would have driven me nuts had I not been able to have a way out of it. I think that Gawker is in many ways a very traditional approach to how to make money off of blogging. It's essentially Nick Denton, the eccentric British millionaire, is a publisher who pays writers a salary and then sells ad space. And that's about as traditional as you can get as far as like a money-making structure goes. I think that the advent of Google Sense and Google's AdSense and blog ads is opening up blogging to people, is allowing people to make money off of blogging who aren't going to get noticed by the, you know, eccentric British millionaire. And they may not make a lot of money, but they are making some, which hopefully keeps them in play and helps them to get over whatever, you know, if someone hits a wall or gets burned out. Money is a definite motivator to keep blogging, even if you feel you have nothing to say. I know that very well.
So. Thanks.
Hi. You said something that surprised and amazed me, and that is that you actually have friends in Washington from the other team. Because I lived in Washington for 9 years.
You mean gay? Or?
No. That would be a San Francisco question.
No. I you have gay friends, too. Gay Republican friends.
That's what surprises me. I lived in Washington for 9 years and had one Republican friend. And I'm wondering how Washington is different with the R's in power as opposed to the D's.
I didn't live in Washington when Clinton was in power. Maybe Tabitha can actually talk more about the culture.
I never lived in Washington.
Right, that's right. I was going to say the culture of the Clintons, at least. I think also, I mean, I can clarify a little. Most of my friends that are Republicans are journalists who are Republicans, and they work usually for specifically ideological magazines. I have a lot of friends at the Weekly Standard, actually. A lot, a few, maybe. And I do think that people who write about politics, even if they're playing for the other team, have developed a very similar sense of humor and a similar kind of cynicism. And so you can banter with them in the same way that you banter with anybody else who's covering the same stuff. That said, I do have friends who are actual workers in the trenches of the GOP. And I can tell you that we don't actually talk about politics that much. I think because we want to stay friends, and I can also tell you that when there are disagreements, they're usually amazingly civil, and I try to learn something.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You've talked a lot about a little bit about policy and a little bit about not policy, but what you haven't talked about is the political system itself, even though it seems like your whole work is based on its effects and what creates Washington. Mm-hmm. So is there anything about our political system that you think you'd really like to see change structurally?
Oh, wow. I should say that I think it's basically a pretty sound system. Like, I haven't seen a better one. That said, I think we're seeing in the headlines, you know, currently examples of what the weaknesses are. I think the new proposals for limiting lobbying expenditures are good and will make a short-term difference. I mean, I think that laws about lobbying always lead to new ways to lobby, and we're constantly playing catch-up, but that's fine. I do think that the culture of incumbency is not a healthy one. The idea of a professional politician wasn't something that the founding fathers were thinking about when, you know, they set up what is basically a very wonderful system. So, I mean, I think it's one thing to have the permanent government class of, you know, writers and staffers, but when someone just becomes a professional senator, I think you end up with very poor, you know, well, for one thing, you end up with poor candidates. I mean, I think that I would just hope that 2008 is the year that Democrats realize that senators can't talk. So I'm not sure if I have addressed your question. I hope so. You're nodding. Yeah. That's good. Okay.
You've talked about the fact that your ability to reveal and expose kind of the sexier, seamier side of Washington has actually engaged younger people in politics. And as somebody on the other side of younger...
other
who's
team.
Out, yeah, who's
no, sorry,
out there
different.
For the older people? Because I think that's been a really important thing that you've done and other people like you is sort of make it a personal thing and an interesting thing to be involved in politics. And I think for people in their 40s and their 50s, there's not an equivalent at this point. And we're bored and disillusioned. And I used to have to commute back and forth to Washington, and I was undone by how boring it was for people of my age. And so is there an equivalent? And
like a Wonkett senior?
Yeah, there you go.
I guess you could wait a few years for me. I think
John Stewart appeals to everyone.
Yeah, he's also, isn't he old? He's,
well, compared to what?
He has gray hair.
Yeah, he has gray hair.
He's got a kid.
You know, he's, yeah, child. That's yeah. old.
But, I mean, that perspective, you know. I think
that's a good question. I think that there is a, I mean, if you're talking specifically like 40s and 50s, like that's younger than boomers. And they don't, there isn't like a voice, you know.
Yeah, there isn't.
Articulating those people's, you know, complaints. I wish I could say, oh, yeah, there's this perfect blog for you.
Or this...
But why don't you start one?
Good idea.
Do you think the capital B blogosphere is in danger of taking itself too seriously at this stage of the game?
Yes, I think that's a danger for most people in general. I think also that it's a danger when any medium starts to mature. I think you start to lose whatever element of meritocracy existed. And cliques develop, self-righteousness gets overblown. You see a kind of caste system. And I think that is happening in the blogosphere. I think that you have like your upper echelon blogs that just stay in the top 10 and there's not a lot of movement below that. I do think, however, that because blogging has such a low barrier to entry, that it's a lot, I mean, it's a lot like punk rock. There's always going to be another garage band, you know. There's always going to be another Strokes or White Stripes waiting to happen. I worry that the instapundits and, you know, Corners and Wonkettes of the world take up so much real estate that people won't find that. But I also think that people at the top will make mistakes and get taken down, and that's how it should work. You don't want the blogosphere to turn in. You don't want those people at the top of the blogosphere to turn into the New York Times, you know, who think they're infallible. And clearly make mistakes.
Thanks.
How long until perhaps America loses its power in the world or its position, and who's next? Who's the next to rise?
Wrong forum. Is there some foreign policy thing happening somewhere you wandered in from?
Sorry.
I love it that people will ask me serious questions.
And please, in your answer, I'd like to hear something about anal sex. Oh.
Well, you see, the thing is, Pat Robertson would say the reason why America is going to lose its power is it's God going to hit us with some more
Excellent.
Hurricanes because
yes.
of the whole anal sex thing. So that's my answer.
Thank you.
And Pat Robertson, I'm next on Pat Robertson's
list. See,
it
wasn't that hard.
Right.
I'll ask you a very unserious question.
Thank God.
This is a game that my brother-in-law plays that I adopted. So I'll give you four choices.
I'm a little... Is it involved masks?
No masks. No.
This isn't an appropriate venue. Like, so the other guy, you were like that other guy.
Don't worry about it. You'll see. It's, I'll give you four choices, and I want you to rank them from the bottom to the top. Okay? And try to build attention. Be honest. Okay, choice number one. You snap your fingers, and you are the All Music Guide. You know everything there is to know about music. The All Music Guide comes to you for advice. Number two, full standard of living upgrade, meaning everywhere you go, first class, the Volvo gets trained into. Robes everywhere, at home too. Number three, the book takes off. It's a bestseller. Friedman, he's laughing. He's in envy of you very much. And number four, you're in. You're totally in. You're on the inside. And not only are you on the inside, you're a Republican. And you really believe that you are a Republican.
Some weird bedazzled
You are
thing.
Truly conservative.
Are you
Music,
the devil?
Wealth.
Yeah, everything. You've got it all. You've got the whole package.
Music, wealth.
The book.
So you've got...
Bestseller.
Start at the bottom.
Right. I'd say that the last one you named is my least interest, what I'm least interested in, the being in, and certainly being a Republican. Not interested. Then I guess I'd go with third would be the complete standard of living upgrade. Sort of feel like I'm happy. You know, I already have robes. Maybe just at the hotels, but that's fine for now. I'm a girl from Nebraska. I don't need much. And then, gosh, it's tough between the music and the best-selling book. I think I'm going to have to go with best-selling book first. I think my publisher would be very upset if I put music ahead of it. So, those are great
questions,
though.
What does
she win? Yeah. It's a game. It's like what? The prize?
Hi, I don't have any game or foreign policy, but you hammer the other side pretty hard. What kind of feedback do you get from the White House? What kind of feedback do you get, or do you hear anything from McClellan?
Oh, they don't. They have no idea who I am.
I think they do.
I actually met Scott McClellan once at the White House Christmas party, actually. Mm-hmm. As someone thought it would be amusing to bring Wong Kat to the White House Christmas party. And I think they hoped that I would get really drunk or something, or that it would be really scandalous, but most of the people at the White House just didn't, at least higher up, didn't know me. Scott McClellan, kind of my one great moment there was he seemed to sort of know who I was, and the reporter from the Washington Post gossip column, he was like, "And you are..." So that was nice for me, my ego. And then I did something for Scott, which is that I got him to sign my invitation for my intern, who just totally idolizes Scott McClellan. My intern's very odd. I have heard that there are some people in the White House who read Wong Kat. But I do think that in general, blogs are just so... They already control the media, you know. They control Fox, at least. They don't need... They're not concerned. They're not concerned with blogs. Like, that's really... And thank God. I mean, if they were, I would be very, very worried.
One other question. Do you ever have, and don't divulge them, do you get sources from the White House at all?
Not really, no. I you would not be surprised, perhaps, to hear that I get... the few tips I've received from anywhere close to being the news-making quadrants of the federal government have been from the State Department, who are, of course, known by the White House as State Department weenies. So.
Thank you.
Of course, they look to Wong Kat.
I felt like in going through Wong Kat very fast and furiously that it actually got nicer as the years went on. Did you feel like you started out kind of wicked mean and just sort of softened up?
And
the more you got to know the place, the more you liked it? Or
I think that's part of it. And also, I discovered the hard and fast rule that as soon as you say something really vicious about somebody, you will run into them at the grocery store. Because this is not a factor of being like on the inside. This is just, it's a really small town. It is like a little village. And also in that people who run in, who are part of this particular world tend to live in the same neighborhoods and go to the same places. And so I think as that happened more, my first rule of thumb was always okay to ruin someone's day and not someone's life. My second rule of thumb is, can I look someone in the eye after I say this?
Mm-hmm.
I can still be pretty mean. I'm not a nice person in general. remembering that I might have to like, you know, be behind them in the express lane, like, is a good check.
It's interesting. You mentioned you thought that Lyndon Johnson was an interesting person. I too agree with that greatly. If it wasn't for Vietnam, he's another Roosevelt. But that's like saying if I didn't have two heads, I'd look normal. My question for you now is, you've sort of indicated you believe that the conservatives are going to rule in the next 10 years or so, and that's why you're writing this book. My question then becomes, what do you think at this point went wrong? When we were young, when people like me were young, growing up in the 50s and 60s, and we saw the amazing changes in freedom, civil rights, and the anti-war movement, all of this, where did it go wrong? How did it die out?
I this is an incredibly glib answer and perhaps expected, but if I had the answer to that, I wouldn't be wasting my time here. Like, I'd be banging down the door of the DNC. demanding to be let in, which is something other bloggers do, feel like they feel like they know what the problem is and they have an answer for it. I just see the problem. I do feel like, in general, I mean, I don't know what went wrong. I think that the answer is more involvement from everyone. And the thing that gives me a little bit of hope is the fact that, we were talking about earlier, that more people, because I've managed to make politics seem dirty and sexy and fun in some weird way, that more people, you know, get drawn down into the less sexy parts as well. And I do think in general the blogosphere has, again, that low barrier to entry has given people at least the feeling like they're participating in a national debate. And perhaps that, you know, leads to actual participation in things that require you to leave the house. So that would be a good next step.
We have 2 more minutes left and 2 more questions, so I'd like to get you both in, but let's try to keep that in mind.
Lightning round.
All right. As you are fast becoming and aspiring to be a part of the in crowd, I'm wondering what are the prices that you have to pay? Is it what you expected? And what are some of the benefits that you enjoy?
Weren't you listening to the little game? The in crowd is very low on the list. In crowd is last on the list. And I would actually like to avoid being part of it, because I do think you have to sacrifice being interesting and you have to sacrifice being mean, which are the other things very important to me.
Oh, yeah. Those are intrinsic in your nature. Yeah. Oh, very good. And don't ever lose that.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to remember you said that.
What do you think about Google being subpoenaed to produce everything that they, in an unspecified amount of time, which could end up to millions and millions and millions? I mean, like, I sent a White House email trying to connect Bush to 9/11, and I never got an answer. Maybe I will get an answer now.
Well,
are you familiar with that?
I thought I was, but the second part of the question confused me.
Oh, well, no, just the first part.
So Google's been subpoenaed by
the Justice Department.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're supposed to turn over
one week, a seven-day period.
Yeah.
Right. Well, maybe this is finally going to – I've been shocked and disappointed that people aren't out in the streets about the domestic spying cases in general.
Right.
You know, at some point they'll notice that it's bad, you know, and maybe the fact that Google is a household word, you know, and people use, and it's a verb and it's part of people's lives in a way that, you know, I guess not everyone calls Iraq long distance. maybe that people will finally notice that their liberties are being violated.
Well, we have to leave it at that, although that's a pretty complex,
not a different kind of violation.
Closer. Let's give a big hand to Anna Marie Cox for her thoughts here tonight. We hope you will come back on your next book tour. Now, this meeting of Inforum, a division of the Commonwealth Club, is adjourned. I'm Tabitha Soren. Good night.